Weekend Breakfast with Refilwe Mpakanyane
on 702.
Time to say good morning now to our resident journalist, motoring journalist, and motoring enthusiast, Ernest Page. Good morning, Ernest.
Good morning, Refilwe. As I stir my mayonnaise into my coffee, I greet you from Cape Town.
What lies are you telling us this morning, Ernest? Really, your mayonnaise into your coffee?
Not a chance.
I might do it. I might do it for a healthy sum of money. I take that on. But not unless it's under duress or there's some financial reward.
You can tell Hellman's the two of us are looking for a team sponsor for our racing team. That's a different story.
Fantastic stuff, Ernest. So you're bringing us some motoring news as per usual. And then, of course, you'll be giving us a sense of two new cars launched this week, the BMW X3 and talking about the Porsche 911 GTS. But let's start off with a Peugeot and the news coming out of them.
Yes, Peugeot, which whatever you want to call it, have once again won Car of the Year. It's the second time in recent years that they've won the prestigious title, this time with a 2008 and before with a 3008. And I think the big news here is that Peugeot, their turnaround that they've been pushing for the last 10 years, spearheaded by a gentleman named Xavier a couple of years ago, has worked. Mm. Their reputation in our industry had suffered a little bit, and they admitted to it, which is always refreshing to hear when a manufacturer admits to the issues that they're facing.
Yeah.
Especially this market. And they did that. They publicly admitted that there were issues with servicing, there were issues with reliability, there were issues with after sales, and they went on a big drive to sort that out. And I think now they're starting to see those benefits where the consumer's starting to trust the brand again because their products have never been an issue. In Europe, their products always do very, very well. They're one of the best-selling car makers in Europe.
Yes,
but
of course,
in South Africa, they've suffered a lot, I think, based on reputation. And now they're slowly starting to sort that reputation out. And here we are now with another Car of the Year winner.
Lovely. Fantastic. And when it comes to getting that trophy of Car of the Year, the country, I mean, it's a highly sought after and respected accolade. What were the considerations when judges were making this decision?
Well, the judges on the Car of the Year get to look at a varying amount of facets of what makes this car good. They look at after-sales backup. They look at service level. They look at reliability indexes. They look at their impressions of the car. Then also there is one category where, the audience can also give their feedback. And in this case, the judges, who are some of my very esteemed colleagues, came up with the conclusion that the Peugeot is overall a very, very good car that presents good value for money in its segment. Peugeot is not it's a premium brand, but they're not as expensive as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get into these Peugeots nowadays, it feels like it's competing against the likes of Jaguar or Volvo, but you're kind of paying VW money for it in some cases. So I'm very happy to announce that, my colleagues have looked at this car and basically looked at a varying amount of criteria and come up with the conclusion that this is the best car.
Yeah.
Overall for this year.
Yeah, that price point, as you said, is pretty enticing if you're shopping around and you're on the market. Just describe really quickly before we move on to the next two vehicles. Describe the Peugeot that we're talking about, the 2008 SUV, in terms of what you're getting and even the design. I mean, a lot of these cars are looking pretty similar and, no complaints there. But it puts me in mind of, I don't know if I'm thinking of like a Land Rover, a Discovery. There are plenty of designs just kind of giving us the same really sleek, also chic finish, but kind of samey, almost like, a lot of these are coming off the same platform.
Exactly. So a lot of these cars are on the same platform, but this car does stand out ever so slightly. It's a compact SUV, and you get subcompact, which is a tiny one. So it's a regular-sized SUV for your regular-sized family, 2.5 kids, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But it does look very chic, as you say, and the looks are a bit unusual. And in the modern day, when a lot of cars do look similar, this one does still stand out. It's a bit difficult to stand out these days, but it does still stand out. So I think it's a very chic car, as you say, very stylish, and it gives a little bit of individualism as well.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to the BMW X3. It's updated, now on sale in South Africa. Tell us more.
The BMW X3 is a proudly South African built car. And the 3 Series used to be built in South Africa, but now the X3 is built in the Rosslyn factory. So it's quite a good story in the sense that there's a lot of jobs provided. There's big investments coming from overseas. Last I checked, it was around $6 billion that was invested into the factory a few years ago to get it up to spec for the X3. BMW have they've got renewable sources. 30% of the power for the Rosslyn factory comes from renewable sources. They donate cars to Rhino poaching units. So it's a really feel good story.
Anti-Rhino poaching units. let's just be clear.
Yeah, let's not be jumping on the back of X3 poaching rhinos, people. Yeah, so the anti-poaching units, of course. And it's a feel-good story, and the car itself is now becoming BMW's bestseller. They are producing tens of thousands of these and selling these all over the world at the moment. It's the new 3 Series, so to speak, BMW X3. And the version that I drove were the 2-liter diesel, and that's 140-kilowatt diesel, and then the top-spec M40i, which is an interesting and aspirational car, but for me, the diesel is still a fantastic pick.
Tell me why.
Because diesel has got a bad reputation because of what happened over the years with Dieselgate in Europe. And South Africa, unfortunately, or fortunately, it is a diesel economy. You know, we've got lots of trucks on the road. We've got an economy that's largely based on diesel, and it will be that for a long time.
Sure.
So to buy a diesel car in South Africa makes a little bit of sense at this stage because you've got something that's very powerful, very talky, easy to drive, and those characteristics that we're now starting to like on electric cars are characteristics that diesel cars actually do imbue. Because, you know, when you put your foot down, the power's there immediately.
Yeah.
So I think for a car like this as well, for me, I'm not the biggest fan of performance SUVs. So for me, a diesel version of an X3 makes more sense than a powerful 1.4 million rand performance version.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Obviously, BMW calling the X3 the athlete among the SUVs, and you're saying, well, not so much for you. But in terms of that facelift, what are we looking at here, and what can people expect to see either as they go check it out at the dealership, on the dealership floor, or just ogle it on the roads?
Now, this is the thing with facelifts, is that I was looking at a car yesterday. I thought to myself, if I was a regular consumer, I wouldn't really know the difference.
Mm.
So you'd have to look at them side by side because the differences are quite subtle. You've got a narrower light on the front, but it now comes standard with LED. So even though you might not see the difference, you will experience it. The grille is slightly different and bigger, as with all BMWs these days, and there's a space in the middle for the camera. The bumpers have been changed, but the big changes, I think, are the fact that you've got bigger wheels on the entire range.
Yeah.
So now the car looks like the 40-year version of the car that you buy. And then you also have interior that's been updated. The new BMW interior, which is fantastic and works quite well, is now in this car. So it feels like a more modern version of the same car. And in the space where some manufacturers are upgrading and some manufacturers are keeping their old system, BMW kind of separated themselves a little bit by making theirs the most modern interior that they have available in their range.
And by most modern, you mean what?
So you've got Android Auto, of course. You've got Apple CarPlay. You've got touch screens in the front. You've got a big digital display on the dashboard. So there's no manual or no clocks on the dashboard. It's all digital at the moment. You've got the start button, the new center console with the start button in the middle. You know, so it's all these touches where the interior looks like the newest BMW interior. And that does, it's noticeable. You know, even when you're driving a car, you kind of get the sense that the car feels a little bit old. If you put the two X3s side by side, this car will feel, especially from the driver's side, this car will feel like a much, much newer car thanks to the 10-inch screen on the central display and, of course, it's got a 5-inch screen directly in front of the driver.
All right, fascinating stuff. A quick one. I know you drove the diesel M40i. That's what you mentioned, right? But I've read about the BMW X3 Mzansi Edition. Any sense of what that was? What sets it apart? What makes it unique?
The Mzansi edition, unfortunately, is not being made anymore.
Oh.
They will probably make a different version or a limited edition later on. All of these other versions of Mzansi edition was the previous one. This one now, they've only got a limited range at the moment. Even the performance high-end version, the X4M, you can still buy that old version, but there will be a newer one. And I think it might be best advised for those that want limited edition ones to wait till later on. Usually what happens with limited editions, they make them at the end of the previous run. And that's more than likely what BMW was thinking when they came up with Mzansi.
All right. Fantastic. Ernest, moving on to your second review. The new Porsche 911 GTS, you say, is more hardcore than you'd imagine. Did we imagine otherwise? Tell us about the new Porsche 911 GTS.
So I'm going to sound like I'm some sort of Porsche expert.
Please do.
I haven't got much experience with Porsche, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a bit of excitement mixed in here with this journalist trying to give an impartial opinion as well. So the car enthusiast in me was thrilled to be driving the new 911.
Okay, let's talk to the car enthusiast first, and we'll end with the journalist.
Okay,
sure.
Okay, that sounds great.
Cool.
So Ernest, car enthusiast hat now on. And the GTS is a sensational car. Anybody that's driven a Porsche has told me, and that will keep telling everybody that will listen, that Porsches are really good cars to drive, even though the engine's at the back.
Mm.
Once I've driven the Porsches that I have driven, I keep wanting to get out and shout from the rooftops, can we all just put the engines at the back now and stop what we're doing? Because it really does feel like over the years and the almost 50 years of development that has gone into it, that they finally got that formula right. They've got that formula right, and the engine at the back really does work. It feels very intuitive. It feels right. I've spent some time with the CEO of Porsche South Africa, Toby Venter, and also with the data communications of Porsche South Africa. And their service levels, my experience and from what I see they do with their clients, is incredible. And that ethos comes down from the top within Porsche, and it trickles down through the staff, it trickles into the car. So the Porsche driving experience is not just the driving experience. I think it's the ownership experience, and they provide a unique level of service to the owners, and that sort of permeates through the whole culture of the company. So I can understand why Porsche drivers, and more specifically Porsche owners, are so enthusiastic about the brand, because it really is an experience unto itself.
Yeah. Well, talk us through the sort of the price point for the 911 GTS. First of all, we'll get to experience, etc. Because talk us through the price point. Obviously, they've got a long and proud heritage, so they've got a lot by way of legacy to protect, right? And when you talk about that entire brand experience, I always think, well, if you know, once we breach a certain threshold, I better become the ultimate VIP. You know, I better be your black card customer, which gets treated like royalty. What does that experience extend to when it comes to after-vehicle sales, maintenance, service, and that experience at large?
And that's exactly it. An example of such an experience was when one of the clients had an issue with a car. They immediately sent a car over to his house because he was late for a meeting, and then just took his car away and sorted it out. You know, that's the kind of services you can expect, and this is all coming from one of the PR communication staff in the company. It's not just a service manager. The pricing for the GTS starts at 2.29, and it ends at 2.6. The one that I drove was the Carrera GTS, and then the Carrera 4 is 2.4 million. So the price is relatively high, but having said that, Porsche customers are now given the opportunity to buy something like the Macan, which starts at 1 million. Mm-hmm. So if you're in the mood to get into the Porsche ecosystem, there is an entry point at 1 million. And you get the same sort of experience, you get the same treatment from Porsche South Africa, but it's just not the same car. And I think most people that buy 911 GTS, it's probably not going to be their first Porsche. They probably have the older version of the 911. They're probably now looking to upgrade to this version. Or maybe they've got the normal Carrera S and now want something a bit more sporty, because this GTS fits in between the Porsche 911 Turbo and the regular Carrera. So it's a perfect in-between car for someone that wants performance driving, but also wants comfort day-to-day.
All right. Okay, talk us through the driving experience, what you loved, what you experienced as the car enthusiast, but as the journalist, Ernest Page, as well.
Mm. So as a journalist, Ernest Page, there were many things that I like, and we can start with things I didn't like. The screen in the car is absolutely flat, and I would have liked that to be more tilted towards me. And, you know, there are a digital section on the dash that aren't 100% visible because the steering wheel is also quite small. Having said that, you can press a button and then the dash simplifies and now you can see everything. And I do think because this is a facelift, the next generation, they'll upgrade the screen, and I think the screen will more than likely be tilted towards the driver. But at the end of the day, when it comes to the 911 experience, there's a little bit of nitpicking involved. You know, the ride, the tire pressures were pumped up a little bit because of the high-speed cruising that we were going to do, the long-distance cruising. So it was a little bit choppy on certain bumpy or very bumpy roads.
Mm-hmm.
But on a smooth road, it is just absolutely wonderful. The suspension changes can be felt. And again, as I said, re-picking or finding fault with this car is an exercise in nitpicking because it really is a 10 out of 10 car in certain areas and a 9 out of 10 car in other areas. Many journalists have messaged me and told me it's all you ever need. It's really one of those cars that can be all things. It's the kind of car that you can drive to the shop. It's got a reasonable storage space in front of two bags, and you can also drive it around, but it's also effectively a supercar, where most supercars fall short in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure, it's really all you need. That's quite an assertion. Some of your colleagues have certainly fallen in love with the vehicle. All right, fantastic. So I guess you were blown away. You were impressed, Ernest. Just give me a sense as well of the passenger experience. Obviously, this is a driver's car, but when you've got that significant somebody there in the passenger seat, what's the experience for them?
Well, I was sitting with Magnus Hatting from the Bilt, and he was driving in the Macan as well as the 911. And in the Macan specifically, I noted that the passenger experience was really, really good. There's a lot of space given to the passenger. The sacrifice, I think, for the 911 is certainly in the rear legroom for the back seats, which are almost non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
But they've taken into account what the passenger experience will be because this is that kind of car. This is grab your significant other by the hand and let's go on an adventure kind of car. So they've taken that experience into account with the seats, with the space, the ergonomics, I think, are more suited to the passenger with regard to that very flat sensor screen. So the passenger gets access to that sensor screen. So there's a positive flip to that sensor screen being as flat as it is, where I would have preferred a more driver-focused setup.
Sure.
But definitely the passenger experience was taken into account with this car. And it's an awesome weekend car for oneself and the other.
Mm. Talk to me about the specific sports suspension, which and just the experience of being so low to the ground, which I always find weird and unsettling, never having owned one, but of course a ride or two has happened. Just give me a sense of that and how quickly you adjust to that, especially like you are toggling between vehicles quite consistently week to week. Is it something you get used to fast? Obviously, you're proud of this car, you're excited about this car, or is it still just a bit of an uncanny experience?
Yeah, it's always unsettling the first couple of minutes. I look like a learner driver quite often when I jump into a new car. But the thing about a good car is a good car, like Honda Civic Type R, like Toyota Yaris, these cars feel like they wrap around you eventually. And the Porsche has that sense as well, where yes, it's wide, yes, it's low, but you spend 5, 10, 15, 30 minutes in it, and it slowly starts to wrap around you, and you slowly start to understand where the dimensions are. And one of the things that I actually pointed out to my colleague was that even though the car is very wide, I can feel where every wheel is. So I can feel where all corners of the car are, and that's something that is really the hallmark of good cars, where you get so much information from the road, thanks to now the new suspension that's 10 millimeters lower.
Yeah.
And the tricks, you get optional suspension options for this car as well if you want to go more hardcore. But the suspension that comes in the GTS really sends the driver a lot of information, and that's what you want. I think it's the kind of car that you don't even need to drive fast to get enough information in to get comfortable.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I like that. A responsive vehicle, right? Nothing like driving this new unwieldy thing that gives you no sense of where you are on the road in relation to your environment. It can be really bizarre and unsettling. And I like the fact that you've thrown in other vehicles of a more accessible price point.
Yes.
That give the same experience as well.
Indeed. Look, I think these are aspirational cars for some, and there are other cars that are available at different price points that give similar experiences. I think for many, this is the end game car. You know, this is the car that a friend of mine, that's a producer, a director, he's got two Porsches in his fleet now, and that was his end game. Once he got to a certain level, the Porsche is that car. And I think many drivers like myself, many car enthusiasts, will eventually migrate in that supercar direction once they get to a certain point in their careers. And this is one of those cars.
Look at you. All right, Ernest, where can we find you when it comes to the social media pages and, of course, your website?
Yes, please check out Performance With Page on YouTube, Instagram and Facebook, and my new website, performancewithpage.co.za, where this story and others will be found in the next coming days.
Always a pleasure, Ernest Page. We'll check you out in about 2 weeks' time. In the meanwhile, you stay safe on those roads and bring us back some lovely content when next we speak.
I'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
Ernest Page, Performance With Page, is where you can find him on all the social media platforms as well as online. After the 7:30 sports update with Anthony Teixeira, we're going to be talking food with Anna Trepido. Moving on from there, Small Business Wellness Corner, we're speaking to the co-founder of Arbor Cafe and Courtyard. And a reminder that if you'd like to be featured on Weekend Breakfast, Small Business Conversation in the weeks to come, refilwe@702.co.za is the email address to send your message on.